Hello and welcome to our Institute of Nutritional Endocrinology monthly office hours call. This is a place where you just can drop in and ask me questions about anything at all that's on your mind related to one of our programs, whatever program you might be in, whether it's NEPT or IRSPT or Clinical Mastery of Digestion or whatever other program we might at some point in time be running. So I'm here to just support you in any way possible and answer your questions. You know that if you have a question in advance of the call, you can always type it in to the website, or my preference would be to this Q&A box on Instantel Seminar where we usually run the calls. So let's just go for it. So anybody has a question, a comment, you want to share a success, you want to ask a question about a program, about a client, or even about something related to marketing your business and getting this program out into the world, please go ahead and raise your hand with a star two. Okay, we have Isabel and then Laura. Hi, Isabel.
Hi, Dr. Rita Marie. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Good. Good. So I have a actually several questions. So I did a gut restoration program with a group of people for about a month. Everybody got good results, but none of them really have any digestive issues. They just felt really good overall, which is good. But now I'm doing the second time getting people that have lots of digestive issues. So I have some questions.
Okay, so, sure. Well, that's good that your first group took it easy on you, right? They made it easy
for
you?
Yeah, they did. Or they just have some mild bloating and gassing they didn't even realize. They felt really good after the program. It's like, oh, everything is so light. But they didn't really have anything disturbing that happens every single day. So it wasn't like they didn't know what the problem. Like one person says he couldn't sleep on his left, and now that after the program he could sleep on the left.
Oh.
So, yeah, so that was interesting.
Good work.
Yeah. So I was really happy with the results. But this time getting people with all kinds of issues. So so this lady, she said that she can't, everything caused bloating. She's been dealing with it for the last 15 years.
Wow.
And she tried things here and there, things got better, but it doesn't stay. So right now it's like anything she eats, she gets bloated. Mm-hmm.
So does she get bloated immediately? Did you ask her that, if it's immediate or if it comes on later? Yeah.
Yeah, it's immediately. And rice and oats are kind of the thing she could, like the ones that doesn't cause her as much symptoms. So she's been having just rice and oats for the last few days.
Oh.
So anything she takes, it's caused her bloating, and she's hungry at night. Like she wakes up middle of the night 5-6 times, and she has to eat like an apple or a bar or something. She has something next to her bed, and she's starving middle of the night. So she's on thyroid medication, some mood stabilizer, antidepressant, and she has insomnia. And let me see, Estee Bar about 12 years ago.
Okay.
So my suggestion to her, I asked her to go off gluten and dairy to do that. She said, well, I'm mostly off. So I said, you need to be off completely. Yes.
That's the first step. Yes, absolutely.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I told her mostly like no gluten and dairy. And I was thinking about have her follow the FODMAP diet, like the low FODMAP foods to start with.
You could, but are rice and oats on that list? Because if you know, you got to think about what she tolerates. If rice and oats are on that list, then it's probably not FODMAPs because those foods feel good for her.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So have you asked her exactly what she's eating? Do you have like a diet diary so you see what combinations she's making?
Not yet. She's getting that for me. She right now she's getting so bad that anything I eat gives me bloating,
really
not
so
much of the gas, but bloating. So she did do the digestive questionnaire assessment tool. So that information I have, and it looks like she has bacteria imbalance. And in her gut. So possibly yeast infection. I have yeast overgrowth. I haven't had her done the assessment yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it could be any number of things, right? So I usually start from the top. I usually start with what are they eating? How long after it?
Okay.
How long after the bloating starts? Because if it's immediate, then there could be something that's happening in the stomach area, right? That's causing her to bloat.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I'm thinking bloating. I'm thinking stomach acid. So really have to make sure her stomach acid's okay.
Okay. Yeah, she says say 1 hour.
1 hour. Okay, so it's probably down in the small intestine.
Or that's very
maybe
often.
It depends on what she's eating, right? So something's get out of there shorter. And she hasn't found a pattern, like certain foods other than the rice and oats are good and others are not. Yeah, so you want to proceed with exactly what she's eating so you can see. If she's still on gluten and dairy and she says mostly, for some people mostly means, you know, occasionally once a year when I'm at my parents' house for Christmas, I indulge in something with gluten. For other people that say occasionally, it means that they only eat it once a day, you know, or three times a week, you know, right? And so that inflammation can be precipitating for a very long period of time. So I would really hone in on what exactly it is. I've had people say, yeah, I'm gluten-free. And then I look at their diet and I'm like, really? No, I don't eat grains. And they're eating corn chips once a week. Or they're, you know what I mean? So you have to look at those kinds of things really seriously.
Okay.
Sometimes when the gut gets really inflamed or messed up, it needs a break. So oftentimes people put people on a – before I go to the FODMAP thing, because it drives people nuts and it's not real balanced, unless they're not responding to the other stuff, then I'll look at that. But I know that sometimes the gut is so inflamed that just going on a liquid diet – for a few days. And that doesn't mean a starvation diet. It depends on whether she has to lose weight or not. Is she overweight, underweight, normal?
She's a little bit old, not too much. She thinks she's overweight. I saw her. She looks fine. But she said she did do juicing. That didn't help either. I didn't, because it's a group program. I did a 30-minute assessment.
Yeah.
I do a pre. So I didn't have time to ask all that. When we meet next time, I could get into more detail. But she said, I did juicing. It's still, you know, I'm still bloated. It's like nothing I eat.
Yeah, but that's it again, right? Mm-hmm. You have to find out exactly what they did. You know, they did a carrot right?
Okay.
Right? And if it's a sugar thing and it's a yeast overgrowth, carrot and beet is going to bloat her because it's going to feed the bacteria.
Yes. Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Really specific. And you know, especially when you're doing a group program like this and you only have a 30-minute consult, I would make sure that you create a more thorough questionnaire that they fill out before you have your conversation with them, because you don't want to have to ask them those kind of questions on the call because it wastes your 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So you ask them, what kind of interventions have you had? Describe it. Have you ever done a juice cleanse? What kind of juice cleanse have you ever done? Like all the different interventions that you would want to do for your particular, like for this is gut.
Okay.
So you wouldn't be asking her if she's ever done an adrenal program or whatever. But you want to look at, is that an issue, right? Is she under stress? Because seems to happen a lot with people is when they start to do dietary changes and they start to do restriction because they have a specific issue, then they suddenly they're restricting and they're very stressed out about what should I eat or what shouldn't I eat? What can I eat? And then the whole regime around eating becomes this stress situation, which then aggravates it because we shut down the digestion.
Okay.
So I'd be asking her about her constipation, diarrhea, bloating, et cetera, like that. She may have an ileocecal valve that's stuck in the shut position. And it's causing her to bloat. She may have bacterial overgrowth, you know, candida overgrowth, any of those things. Mm-hmm. It could be stomach acid. It could be, you can ask her more specifically, well, it's. I know you said it happens with everything, but is it worse when it's a fatty food?
Okay, well, yes, fatty food on the question, yes. When she eats fatty food, definitely gives her problem.
Okay, so there may be some liver or gallbladder involvement there.
Yes.
So a lot of the things, you start with your basic intervention stuff, right? Like get them chew their food, right?
Yes.
Breathe, relax.
Yes, she doesn't chew,
She doesn't chew?
No, she doesn't chew that well.
Okay, so these are the simple things, right? When somebody comes and says, I'm tired, and you go through all this stuff, and then you go, well, how many hours of sleep do you get? Oh, 3 or 4.
Yeah.
You go, wow, I just chased the rabbit down this goose chase. And it's probably lack of sleep. Let's work on that. You know, it's the whole when you hear hoofs, think, beats, think, horses, not zebras. So yeah, she could have, and she could get benefit from a FODMAP diet. But if rice and oats are okay, I believe that those are considered high FODMAP foods. So it's probably not that, and that's a really restrictive diet, and you don't want to put somebody who's already stressed out on that.
Okay. And she said she used to like to do a lot of greens, but it gives her problems, so she stopped doing greens. So her diet's a lot of starch, she's like yam, potato, beets. So it's just, I told her that she probably has an imbalance of bacteria, and that's feeding the bacteria, so it's not.
And if she had problems with greens, what kind of problems? Mm-hmm. Right? Did it get gas and bloating?
Yeah.
Did she get constipation?
Yeah, bloating, because they're mostly bloating. Yeah. She just gets
raw versus cooked? Like, is it salad versus, you know, steamed broccoli or cruciferous versus not?
It's she did raw, and I haven't asked about cooked, so I'll do that. She's from what I, you know, the 30 minutes we have, just like everything gives me problems. So she's, okay.
Yeah.
So
I asked start to have to do a symptom and a symptom diary with a food diary. So you see exactly what she's doing. Now, if when I said liquid before, some people, for whatever reason, don't tolerate green juices. Maybe she has a sulfur imbalance. Maybe she has an oxalate imbalance. But you want to find out what kind of juice, because if it was carrot beet juice or it was mostly, you know, celery carrot juice, then that could be feeding the sugar. So all the things that you can ask them to just try to pin for you to pinpoint. They won't make the connection, but you'll be able to make the connection.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I was like, okay, she's, what do I feed her? So I'll have to run this program very differently. Last time was just very clean diet, and that was simple. So, okay.
Well, does she have a very clean diet?
I don't know yet. So I'm going to get her, I have her do, a journal for me.
Yeah.
And then I could go from there.
Perfect. Yeah. Yeah. Because a lot of times people think they have a very clean diet. And when you look at it, you're like, that's not clean. And it's pretty straightforward. Right. And maybe she's eating foods and she sprinkles like soy sauce on everything, which has gluten in it. She didn't even know.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So what about the waking up at night? She's starving.
Yeah. It sounds like she has a blood sugar imbalance. It sounds to me like...
Yeah, she did mention that. Okay.
Blood sugar imbalance.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Her body can't maintain it. And maybe that she's having a high glycemic dinner, and then her insulin levels go up and then crashes during the night, and she...
Okay. Yeah. So, okay.
Yeah. I don't know, you know, you don't want to get into necessarily the whole blood sugar thing, but you know, when somebody comes to a group program and they seem like they have a problem in an area that's not exactly the area of the program, because you don't have the time and the space in the and they haven't paid you enough to go through all of that, you can actually offer her, like, look, I can coach you individually, because I think in addition to the gut stuff, I think it's related too. But you have to be clean, you know, clear that you think that that's an issue.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, she did mention that her from her medical doctor, they did mention to her that she might be hypoglycemia.
Yeah.
So she's aware of that.
Yeah. So you'd want to look at, just ask her if she's had her blood test done, if she has her fasting glucose, but also if they've ever done like a hemoglobin A1C, or if they've done, in order to tell her that, did they do a glucose tolerance test?
Okay.
And this person, if she's mostly on starches, you know what that's doing, right?
Yeah.
It's shooting her sugar way up, and then she's crashing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it looks like starches are making her feel better. Right now, that's her diet, because that's what's causing the least symptoms for her. And will she benefit? I was thinking about some of the herbs to recommend was the scram.
Yeah, if you think she has a yeast overgrowth or a parasite, that would work.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes slippery elm, you know, if she's having this problem with bloating, but sometimes slippery elm makes them worse if it is a FODMAP thing. But I would say try the slippery elm before each meal to calm her down. Does she do digestive enzymes?
She does, and I have to ask her how long. She's like, nothing works, but I don't know if she tried it just for a week or two, or she did the PEP. Bromelain or
bromelain.
Yeah, she said she did that and that didn't work. She did
aloe
vera.
Well, that's not a digestive enzyme. That's purely protein.
That's just the protein, right? Okay.
Yeah, so right. If she got a digestive formula that had lipase in it, it might help.
Yes.
If she's having issues with lipase.
Yeah.
And the other thing you kind of think about if you're thinking maybe fat malabsorption, you look for other signs like fat-soluble vitamin imbalances.
Mm-hmm.
So does she have dry eyes, dry skin, you know, things like that that might indicate that there is a fat absorption problem.
Okay.
Great.
Thank you.
Well, good. It's good that you got one that's challenging for you, but
it might
turn out to be not so much when you find out what
you're
eating.
Okay. Yeah, and I do have another one that she gets acid reflux all the time. So that's the second one. And I have a third person that he just ends up bloating too. I think he has less problem. I haven't talked to him yet over the phone. But he's got some digestive issues, such as bloating. Mm-hmm.
Well, the one with the reflux, do you have some thoughts on what you want to do first with that one?
For her, I think I want to recommend soothing, or like the slippery elm, and then look for maybe H. pylori. She said she did an endoscopy, but that, you know, that might not
doesn't always pick it up.
And she's on coffee, so she's
on
coffee. She's not, her diet is not clean, so if she's able to change her diet, I'm pretty sure she'll get pretty good results. Yeah, I know her diet is not clean at all.
Right. And DGL tends to be a good one. It's easy for people while they're in the middle of making the diet changes. You can get them to get some DGL lozenges and then suck on that right before they eat. And then if they still get burning after, they can have it after. And it at least gives them the symptom relief, but you've got to explain to them what the cause is. And caffeine can cause disruption to the gastric mucosa. So, and looking at some of the other things. So with her, you're probably going to get really good results with the basic diet changes. I have a feeling with the other one too, because she's probably not as clean as she thinks she is. But I think with the DGL, it's going to be a big one, an easy one. Because the slippery elm is great, don't get me wrong.
Uh-huh.
But a lot of people don't want to, you know, do this thing where they have to put this powder and liquid and then drink this slimy stuff, right? If you can get them the DGL, especially the DGL is not as good for the lower down, which is why I usually go for the slippery elm there. But the DGL tends to be really, really good for the stomach mucosa and esophagus if they've got reflux.
Yes, she does. Yeah, and she's afraid that because that's going to turn into something else. That's
so you've got a leverage on her then because she's afraid of that. And whenever you have someone with reflux, you know, that you want to rule out that they have a hiatal hernia. And hiatal hernia is when the stomach goes up through the little opening in the esophagus. And sometimes that can be manually manipulated back if that's the case. There's a YouTube video. Just type in hiatal hernia on YouTube, and there's a couple of YouTube videos. And then most chiropractors know how to adjust it.
Okay. Yeah, my husband has that, and that's, he has that. If he eats clean, then his acid reflux is fine. But if he doesn't, then it comes, So DGL, do you have a brand that you recommend?
No, I mean, I know that lots of them have them. You can get a powder, you can get a capsule, and there's a lot of them. I just look for a clean brand, you know, Thorn Pure Encapsulations. There's a number of them.
Okay, so it's the chewable one more?
You can get chewable.
Better?
It depends on the person. Like, you have to feel out the person. Ideally, a liquid would be nice. Ideally, the liquid mixed in with some slippery elm and make it to tea.
Okay.
But not the liquid, the powder, you know, so you do the powder with
the powder. Okay.
Yeah, I've seen people get results like instantly. I've seen people get results instantly with the slippery elm.
Okay.
But that's the ideal. But if it's a person who's like, you know, they just want the quick and easy, then you can get DGL lozenges. There's a number of good brands.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Great. You're welcome. Great questions.
Thanks.
All right. So now we have Laura. Hi, Laura.
Hi. I had two clients that I wanted to talk about as well. One, it sounds almost like a mechanical issue. We know she had a history of candida overgrowth, and she's really, really cleaned up her diet and noticed a lot of improvements. except she hasn't been able to lose as much weight. Usually she'll do like a candida cleanse like once a year, and she'll drop 11 pounds. And this time around, she hasn't noticed that, so she was a little disappointed about that. But a lot of her symptoms have cleared up, but one of the things that hasn't changed is she notices like a lot of almost like gas and burping and pressure in her esophagus. And it almost sounds like a mechanical thing to me, because she says it happens when she wears like really tight pants or when she rides her bike and she's kind of hunched over on her bike. And also like when she's sleeping on the right side. And I didn't know if that would be like an ileocecal valve issue or a hiatal hernia issue or something mechanical going on too.
Yeah, it's most likely a hiatal hernia. Because of where she's feeling it. It could be ileocecal, but think about the anatomy, right? That's pretty far down for where she's feeling the pressure. And it could be that, you know, the hiatal hernia is just slightly pushed up, and maybe it comes back down after she takes the tight clothes off, but the tightness will push everything upward. The right side, you know, cause of course you think liver, gallbladder when it's on the right side. I'd ask her about if she has any right shoulder or upper back, you know, referral patterns for liver, gallbladder. But it just could be that the way that it shifted, that's, I don't know what the, can't lay on the right side, right? So if she lays on her right side, what's happening to her stomach?
Oh. Actually, I'm sorry, Dr. Emery, I misread that. She's okay sleeping on her right side, but when she sleeps on her left side, it causes.
Okay, good. That makes more sense to me. I was trying to kind of see if I could logically make that. That makes more sense to me. Yeah, so I think it's stomach, and I think it might be hiatal hernia for sure. Yeah, I would have her look into that. Do you know how to manipulate? I don't know if physical therapists manipulate them too, but I know chiropractors do.
I don't know about manipulating a hiatal hernia. And would that just be something that I would refer her to a chiropractor for?
Well, you could, or you know what, go watch, you trained, you're an expert, go watch some of the videos, learn how to do it. And if you see her in person, see if you can do it with her. Because I have clients who do it themselves. They watch the video and they do it themselves. And the video is of somebody doing it themselves. So you can actually teach her how to do it and see how it goes, and people get great results from it. Sometimes it takes two or three times because you know how persistent things get. When they go out of place, they want to go back out of place. But yeah, it works phenomenally.
Okay, well, cool. Yeah, I'll YouTube that and watch that and see if I can learn that.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure you have. I mean, if the layperson can do it, not 100%, but because you have the training and the mechanics and the anatomy physiology, you probably pick it up pretty quickly. It may take a little practice and do it on yourself and see how it feels.
Okay.
But yeah, it might be something you could do, or you can refer to a chiropractor that knows how to do it.
Okay, that sounds good. Yeah, she's been really surprised. We started testing her blood sugar, and she's been really surprised with certain things. Like she had two halo oranges. It like really shut her up. Pretty high.
Yeah, oranges just did that to me recently. I thought I would get away with it, but it didn't.
It was interesting. And, well, thank you for that. That helps quite a bit. And then my other client, she's the one that came to me. She's had digestive issues since childhood. I had her fill out all of the digestive assessments, and she scored high on everything. Mm. Like, I was hoping I would have one area that I could really pinpoint. But she was high on everything. So she's done an autoimmune paleo diet for 30 days. And I was going to, you know, suggest that she try some reintroductions to see how it goes with certain things so that we can know, like, what to keep out. Like, specifically trying different nuts one at a time, some things like that. And she's been having a lot of bloating.
You mean after the introduction? After she introduces things? Or did she do well on her 30-day?
She noticed some improvement, yes, but she's still having some bloating and some discomfort, and she really wants to get tested for SIBO. And I almost feel like it's – this is just me intuitively talking, but I almost feel like it's kind of too soon to jump to that because it's only been 30 days. Like, she's had, like, years and years and years of chronic digestive issues, and she's just started cleaning it up. But I kind of gave her some different options. I was like, okay, we can because I do believe that clients should kind of trust their inner wisdom. If she really feels like she needs to get tested, we can. And I said that's an option. But, you know, my recommendation would really be to continue to stay away from these foods for at least 3 more months and really work on the foundations and slowing down and chewing your food and stress and that type of stuff. But I kind of, like, laid it all out for her. And she emailed me back and said, no, I really want to test for SIBO. And she was like, I got really overwhelmed after our session, and I completely, like, binge, like, went completely off the program and, like, ate all the stuff that I wasn't supposed to. But it was good for me because, like, she got super sick and felt terrible. So I guess that
those things are often good because you can tell them till you're blue in the face what they should or shouldn't do and until they experience it themselves. So I think that's good. I think also what I'm hearing is that she got somewhat better and with this protocol, but there's still some issues. So I would have her do a careful food and symptom diary so you could see if you can pinpoint a specific category, class of foods, you know, whether it's high fat, high carb, high whatever. There's no high carb in autoimmune paleo, but just looking for the specific types of foods or a specific food that is the culprit. Because they think they're paying attention, and we do too. I mean, I go, yeah, I think I got bloated after that meal. I wonder what it was. But you don't pay close attention. And if you don't write it down, you don't get to look and see the next time you get bloated. Huh, I wonder if it's the same thing I ate that I last time got bloated, but that's long since gone because you don't remember.
Yeah. And the only thing that I'm concerned with her about doing that is she's got a long history of eating disorders.
Yeah.
And I was really surprised, like, just by kind of explaining the options. I try to be careful not to overwhelm people with too much information, but and she kind of like went off on a binge after that. And I'm almost wondering, like, if I have her, like, meticulously track stuff, like, mentally, would that be an issue? Or maybe I could just approach it and she could just be honest with me and tell me, you know, is this something we can do or is it not?
Right.
But at the same time, I feel like she has kind of an unrealistic expectation for, I think she thought, oh, I took these foods out for a month and I should be healed. And
exactly. So it's explaining to her that you did take these foods out and your body's starting to heal because obviously the symptoms are better, but there's still something in there that could be causing you a problem and an issue. And we want to, if you can keep track of it, even for just 3 or 4 days, just to see if we see some patterns. And then we can remove some of the others and then add some of the others back in. Like you said, you know, maybe some of the nuts. So find a meal that works for her and add, you know, a dressing to it that has some nuts in it or avocado or some things that she might have avoided.
Okay. And if she did want to proceed with the SIBO testing, can we order that through you, through Direct Lab? I think
I can order it. They will only let, I think Allison Seebecker is the best bet, her site, the SIBOinfo.com, because we tried to get set up so that I could do that, and it was just a royal pain, and we couldn't get very far with it. You can do the, like, Genova one, but that's only a 2-hour. That's not a 3-hour.
Yeah, I saw that. You really need the 3-hour. Yeah.
Yeah. And some of them are glucose, so you can do that. Some of them do glucose, but they're not as accurate as lactulose.
Yeah.
And those anybody can order. So I think there is a lab that Steph had talked about, and maybe Lynn remembers the name of that lab that Steph recommended that she uses. And I don't know if it's Canada only or if it's available in the U.S. as well. But, and Allison SIBO, SIBOinfo.com might be able to get it through them.
Okay, so maybe she could go there and order it that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but find out. Lynn, check. Can you type into the chat and see if you remember, or if Steph, let me see if Steph's on. I don't see Steph on, so let's see. Oh, Lynn just put up a link to a YouTube video. Lynn said she thinks she remembers.
Oh, great.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes, yeah, so I don't do many SIBO tests just because it's more of an exclusion. And, you know, there's things you can do. I mean, you could just assume it's SIBO. One person, I'm just assuming she has SIBO, and we're proceeding that way.
Okay, so we could just do, like, a SIBO diet for, like, 2 to 4 weeks and start, like, with the antimicrobial herbs and things, like that protocol, and just see if things get better.
See if they get better. And then the motility stuff, so the vagus nerve stuff, and/or motor
power. I did just start her on the vagus nerve stuff,
Okay. And you're also looking at her environment when she's eating. Is she eating in a relaxed, calm state?
No.
Okay, well, there you go.
No, we're working on
and maybe sometimes
her
she's more stressed out than others, and that's why she still gets bloated sometimes. May have nothing to do with what she's eating, but how she's eating it.
It's tricky. She's still got a lot several young kids.
Yeah.
And so, like, being able to really sit down and eat a meal has been a challenge for her. So I was like, okay, let's just start if we can, like, make the goal of just, like, one meal and kind of go from there. So,
and the other thing is just have her do a deep breath and appreciation between each bite while she's, you know, that's all, to just go from, you know, shift out of sympathetic into parasympathetic. Start the meal with 30 seconds of breathing. Say grace with her family, whatever, you know, just do a 30-second break, a few breaths. And then she takes a bite, she's chewing it, just chew it slowly. Even if she's having to work with the kids, right, or do something with the kids, she can still keep paying attention to the breathing.
I like that. That's a good idea.
Yeah. Adapt it to what they're at. You know, you can have your ideal approach as everybody sits down and spends an hour eating in a calm, relaxed state, not talking except for, you know, listening to calm music, whatever the perfect situation is. It's rare that anybody's going to be able to achieve that. So how can you get close? But if she's in sympathetic dominant state, maybe sometimes she is and sometimes she's not. And if you don't have records of how she's doing it, then you don't know. It might have nothing to do with food. And then you restrict her unnecessarily from food. And then we go around with this nervous thing, especially someone with an eating disorder. And then the food becomes the enemy. And then it disrupts the relationship with the food. Because, see, she went off and binged after that call. So if it was some simple things like that, that might help her a lot. Because that might be the whole thing.
Yeah,
certainly cleaning up her diet and autoimmune paleo is clean, but it's very restrictive because it's leaving out nuts and seeds and other kinds of things that could be healthful.
Right. And that was my concern with her is I think she felt like, oh, I did this and it didn't work, so I need to go on it and try different, like, FODMAPs or a CD or SIBO diet or stuff. And I'm kind of like, with her, I don't want to just keep, like, taking out more and more food.
Right. I mean, that's going to have her binging. She's going to be pure and clean for 3 days, and then she's going to have a 3-day binge. Because if she's got that distorted relationship with food or has in the past, it can very well trigger the emotional eating. So I'd be careful with that and really go back to the basics of, let's just get you breathing and chewing. And if you can't, if you know that you're in a stressful situation and you have to be eating on the run, blend it.
Yeah.
Blend it and then drink it through a straw because that slows you down.
That's a good idea. Yeah.
Good. Well, good luck with those. You know, everybody comes in with their set of different situations, right? So you can have a protocol to follow or a system to follow, but you always have to be able to deviate off of that for each individual person, but without making it okay for them to do the things you know are hurting them. You know what I'm saying? Like, she has a good reason, but then you have to be creative in thinking, well, okay, how can I still get her to relax and chew while she's eating? Well, get the blender to chew it for her. That's one way. Get her to just slow down between each bite. Put her fork down between each bite. Or if she's eating a sandwich, at least just pause and breathe between each bite. Do you ever watch somebody who inhales their food?
Yeah.
It's like, I
used to do that.
I went out to dinner. We had a friend's daughter in town, and she's like 23. She's a little older than my son, and we took her out to dinner. And I'm sitting across from her. She's this little skinny thing, and I'm looking across at her, and I was just like, you know, just nurturing my food as I normally do, and I don't eat that slowly. And I watched her, and it was practically like she inhaled, and my son does that too. This must be this young person thing. And it's just like, boom, 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 boom. Don't you keep your head in the food and you just shovel it into your mouth. That's not a good thing. That's not a good thing. That's not going to enhance your digestion. So take a breath between each forkful. That's it. Or between each bite if she's eating like a, you know, handheld food.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You're welcome.
A lot.
Being a health coach, health practitioner has so many facets, doesn't it? There's so many facets in working with people.
Yes. Oh, gosh. Yes. It's good, though. I like it. Keeps me on my toes.
It does. If it was too easy, you'd get bored.
This is true.
All right. Thank you, Laura.
Thank you.
Jamie. Hi, Jamie. Your line is open. You might have muted yourself. No? Oops. Your line just went. There it is. It's open again. Jamie, can you hear? No? I'll leave it open. I think you might have muted yourself. Oh, you're on the web. Is your mic? Check your mic. Check to see if it's muted. That happened to me earlier. My mic muted itself. I leaned against the desk and it muted itself. Lynn says, I haven't found a DGL without stearic acid or magnesium stearate. I don't know that I have either in a lozenge form, but that's why I usually use the powder. So I know that Pure Encapsulations and Thorn have a powder that you get in a little tub of DGL and you just mix it. It's tasty. And, you know, if you've got somebody who's really symptomatic and you want to help them with the thing, you just make a concession there and have them do that at least temporarily while you're working on the other issues. Because for them to get the relief makes a huge difference. Jamie, you're open. No? Am I? Yeah. Okay. Anybody else while we're waiting for Jamie? Who else is on? Tony, Virginia. Cell phone, Washington, VA. Wireless caller, Myersville. That's Simone, right? Laura, Farah, Valerie, Isabel. Those are the ones I see over here. Let me look to see if there's any questions typed in. Let's see. Refresh. Allison, lovely to be online. Thank you, Rita Marie. Great, Allison. Glad to have you. Questions? Are we going to just have a short call? I don't mind because I have stuff to do. But Valerie has her line up, her hand up. Hi.
Hi. I don't know if this is an appropriate question for this call, but I have a lot of questions about allergies because allergy season is getting cranked up pretty big right now. And I've been on shots most of my life. And I did go off them for a while trying to do some allergy drops, which didn't work, and I ended up having to go back to the shot. Also have had to take a lot of levocetirizine to deal with symptoms. Finally got off that, but I've had to take a few lately. And my biggest question is, what are the pros and cons of allergy shots? How does that impact the rest of our immune system and all the other things we're trying to build up and do right with all of our programs that we're doing? What are the pros and cons of that? And then what are the pros and cons of meds like levocetirizine to try to manage the symptoms when they get really bad?
Yeah, so, you know, there's always pros and cons to any kind of medication. So I'll address the second question first. I mean, you've got to look at your liver. You've got to look at the ups and downs. I don't know that medication per se. But when you look at taking a med, it's really addressing symptoms, right? It's not addressing the underlying cause. And allergy shots similarly, right? It's just putting it in and saying, okay, you've got this allergy, but the deeper question is, why is your immune system not cooperating? You know, what's going on? What's missing there? Are there specific things missing? Is it a hormonal thing? Is it related to your digestion? Is it related to food allergies in addition to the environmental? Because people all of a sudden, you know, go through cedar time and cedar is up, or ragweed, or whatever the specific season is that may be approaching that cause the allergy symptoms, but they don't really cause
Welcome
the allergy
symptoms.
Whoa.
Enter the conference PIN number followed by the phone.
Let me turn. Okay, I think that was Jamie finally getting in. So, yeah, so it's really like going to the root cause. And going to the root cause is just unpacking the whole system, right? You're starting with all your foundations. Like, are any of those foundations out of whack? You know, what kind of exposures do you have that are filling the bucket? You know, maybe it's a food allergy that doesn't bother you except during allergy season because it's low enough grade that it's just a little bit of a dent, you know, a little ripple in the water. But then you have all this other stuff that adds on top of it and your body can't take it. So I'd be really examining for yourself, getting to the root cause of what's going on. Now, allergy shots are probably the least problematic, much less problematic than having to take a heavy duty medication, antihistamine, a steroid, whatever is normally done. I'll tell you one of the things that I've had great success with folks with allergies is as they approach the allergy season, they're going and doing bowel tolerance vitamin C. And the way you do that is the vitamin C flush, which is in a couple of the programs. It's in the micronutrients module. It's in probably in the blood sugar balance. I mean, it's in a lot of the different ways. If you have any trouble finding it, just reach out and Lynn can find it for you. But the vitamin C flush is an important piece to get yourself up to the threshold of how much vitamin C you need. Now, you might need a lot more vitamin C because your adrenals are burned out. You might need a lot more vitamin C because you have some old injuries or whatever you're taking care of, or that you have some gut inflammation. But whatever the reason, that at least gives you the symptomatic relief to help you get through the season while you're working on it. So one of the things I've had folks do is do a vitamin C flush, figure out what that dose is, and don't be scared of it, because sometimes it comes out that you need 50 or 60 grams of vitamin C. I had one person who came up needing 100 grams. That becomes unwieldy. Most people, it ends up capping it somewhere in the 20 to 30 range. Okay, and some of them are lower. But people who have real severe allergies and have had them lifelong, that's what happens. So it could be just a vitamin C deficiency that you've had a long time because of adrenal stress, because of other things that just taking a good supply of food is not able to replenish. So you do the vitamin C flush, you determine what your amount is. So say the way you do a vitamin C flush, just as a review for folks, is you get some powdered vitamin C. I personally like the Perk brand just because it's fully reduced, which means it's got its full potency basically. So I would start with taking like 1 gram, I think is what we start with. Or I think we start with a gram of it, or half a gram to a gram every half hour. And you just do that on a day you don't have to go anywhere. You don't have an appointment at noon, and you're doing this in the morning hoping that you're fine by noon, because it ain't going to work because you might be rushing to the bathroom at noon. So you're basically taking the vitamin C dissolved in water every half hour. If you take it for 2 hours and you haven't gotten to the point where you're starting to feel digestive rumblings or the urge to go to the bathroom, then you up it. You just increase the ante, and you would go to a gram every 15 minutes. And so as soon as you get a watery evacuation, as if you just had an enema, like urgency, oh my God, I got to go, and it's a floodgate opening. That's the sign that you've had enough vitamin C. And when you do that, you've been marking down how much you took. So say you took 20 grams of vitamin C to get to that point. What you're going to do then is you're going to, take 75% of that. So 75% would be your daily dose moving forward. I do recommend that you give yourself a break day the next day after it, because if you start increasing it after you've exceeded your bowel tolerance, it could create havoc and your gut might be a little bit kind of resistant to it. But like wait it out the next day, and then the next day after that, then you start on the 15 grams a day spread out in at least 3 doses throughout the day. And you do that for a while. Now, one of two things can happen. you can, within 3 or 4 days, start to get diarrhea from that dose, which is good. It means that your bowel tolerance just got lower, so you lower it a little bit. The last thing you want to do is just stop it completely. So you do this, but the other thing that might happen is that your body does all this work with the vitamin C and the need goes up a little bit. So when people do that, I recommend that you redo the flush, the vitamin C calibration, 2 weeks later, at the most a month. So you can stay on that same dose, but retest it in 2 weeks at the most a month, and then see if you still need the same amount or less. But what I've seen is I've had people who've had really bad allergies going into the season. In our area, it's cedar season, and it's December, January. And she would be miserable, and she would have to take steroids, and she'd have to take all kinds of antihistamines, and she just didn't want to do that anymore. So we got her prepared months in advance, and we had her do the vitamin C flush. She had to take quite a lot of it. She started taking it. She soared through the season. Didn't even have to take anything. She took the vitamin C in powdered form, but she also took another form, which is, I really love this product. It's from Vital Nutrients. It's called Aller C, and it's got vitamin C and quercetin and other kinds of bioflavonoids in it. And between that and her powdered vitamin C, she never had to take another steroid.
Wow.
And she was cleaning up her diet and working, you know what I mean? She wasn't just doing that. We had her on a program.
Right. My diet is pretty clean. I was already pretty clean, and now I'm in the metabolic reset. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So it just might be that you've got some deficiencies that just eating lots of greens isn't going to solve if you've had a longstanding, you've got symptoms that have occurred as a result of a longstanding vitamin C or bioflavonoid deficiency.
Okay.
And her diet was pretty clean when she started this because we'd been working on it for quite a while before it. But this made all the difference. And she had years of celiac that she didn't know about, and she was now off gluten. So, and as she was healing her gut, this protocol made all the difference in the world. So I'd highly recommend you think about it. She wasn't the only one. She was the most severe that I, you know, because she had the steroids, but lots of other people who were on antihistamines. And the way I first learned about this was when I first started out, I'd go to lots of seminars, and I was in a weekend seminar, and I met this MD. His name was Dr. Ebnother, and he was from Palo Alto, California, and he started telling me how he got involved in alternative medicine, and he was told me about how he met Linus Pauling and got inspired about C, and he thought, well, I have these chronic infections, sinus infections. Maybe it would help, and he started doing it, and his bowel tolerance was 60 grams, so he got up to, he was taking 60 grams a day. He said it was so much to take that what he did was he just put the powder in his water and drank it across the day, so little bits of vitamin C throughout the day. And he said, voila, within a couple of months, his allergy symptoms completely disappeared, and he was blown away. So over time, he tried to decrease it. And at the time I met him, it had been 3 years in, and he was still having to take 60 grams because every time he went back below that, he had a problem. Now, I don't know what else he was doing dietarily, but I believe that if you're also doing a really good diet and you're the low stress. So look at your seven pillars, look at your stress, look at your sleep, look at your activities, like your fun activities. Do you have enough fun in your life? How's your environment? How's your food? So look at all those seven pillars and see if any one of those is out of balance. But also I would say try the vitamin C calibration. It can certainly save you the expense and the inconvenience, let alone the assault on your body of having to take those drugs.
That's a great option to try. I definitely will. Can you tell me, spell the PERQ brand?
Oh, P-E-R, P-E-R-Q-U-E, and it's PERQ Potency Powder.
Thank you.
Yeah, give it a try. And if you don't have that, maybe Lynn can put it in the chat. It's in most of our programs, the vitamin C calibration paper.
Great. I think I've seen it. I'll do that.
Okay, super.
Thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome. Let's see if Jamie's gone. Darn. I came across this. Oh, you are. Can you hear? Oh, so you're listening on the web. So maybe you can type your question in, Jamie. Oh, on Join Me Conference. Yeah, but you're not listening there, right? Or are you? I don't think I have the line open there. I don't think I'm connected there. So you're listening. You're listening on Join Me as opposed to Instant Teleseminar? Because I didn't think I opened that. Maybe I did. Maybe. Oh, I never hung it up. Okay. Well, I can open up your line. Let me see. Others. I'll take off the mute. Okay, go ahead and say hi, Jamie, and see if we can hear you there. Oh yeah, I can. Let me change to my, I don't know if anybody else can hear you unless I, let me see, what do I do? How do I get it? Can anybody else hear Jamie? Because the interaction between Instant Teleseminar and Jamie. Lynn, can you tell if people can hear Jamie? Can anybody hear Jamie? Raise your hand if you hear Jamie. 'Cause Sequoia can, but it looks like Sequoia might be on, join me too. Oh. So, Tony, you can hear Jamie? You can hear him?
I can.
Oh, perfect. Yay. It works. Okay, thank you. Okay, Jamie, go for your question. I'm going to raise your volume, though, because you're low. So let me just raise your volume. Okay. I just go speaker. And you can also on join me, you can actually raise the volume of your mic. That sometimes helps as well. Raising my speaker. Okay, try it again. It's okay. It's just not that loud. Let me just see if I can raise this speaker. Okay, now speak again. Got it. Nope, I got it. That was me. It was me. Yeah, yeah.
Very good. I've got a couple of simple questions for you we need to get tonight.
Sure.
I'm not going through any test results. So a couple of product questions. So
sure.
The first one is on blue gold iodine.
Yeah.
I've got 15% concentration blue gold iodine, and I want to know, would you recommend taking it transdermally or do you recommend taking it orally?
Well, that's a high potency. So I don't even, I think one drop is probably several mil. I mean, yeah.
One drop is 7.5.
Okay. So that's really high. I think you can take it orally. I think, you know, you can try both and see which one works better. If you take it on an empty stomach, obviously, when you're not mixing it with food, it's going to get absorbed right in through your mucosa. So I think that would work well. The question, Laura says, what was his question? It was on Lugol's iodine. He has a 15% solution. So one drop is 7.5. And the question was, should he take it transdermally or orally? And I said, well, you can try both.
Okay. Okay. Should I try taking it orally and it tastes disgusting?
Oh, yes, it does. Yes, of course. You have to put it on a spot that's not seen. For women, I have them put it on their breasts because it's very protective of the breasts. So you can put it, paint it on the vulva because especially if they have any fibroids or anything like that. But so it does get absorbed. Probably the inner wrist is where you would do it, like the where the tendons are. That's a good place. It's and you wear a long sleeve shirt, that would help. Yeah, so but if it, the taste, yeah, it's bad, but if you mix it in with some vitamin C, because it's really good to take it with vitamin C. No, it's not good to take it with vitamin C. Never mind, mix it with salt. Never mind, you shouldn't take iodine and vitamin C together, but salt, a little pinch of sea salt. That might help.
Is there anything else I need to be careful not to take it with?
The only one I know about is C. Okay.
I'm more aware of the relevance if it comes back low from Lyme disease perspective, but what happens if it comes back high? What does it mean if it almost comes back high?
Mm-hmm.
Annabella was recommended by the doctor to test this hormone, I'm assuming because the sodium levels have historically been quite low.
Okay, got it. Yeah.
135, 136. But on the last test that she did, it came back at 138, which is, you know, reasonable.
Reasonable, yeah.
Her ADH level was 16, which is reasonably high, 16.
So it was high. Interesting, because antidiuretic hormone is, like it says, it prevents you the diuretic, so it holds on to your liquids. So, and usually when you have low ADH, you're going to excrete a lot of sodium. So I would actually expect that her numbers, her response would have been reversed of what it is. Yeah, because if you're holding on to the fluids, you're also holding on to the sodium, and usually the sodium is going to be higher. So if it's high, you would expect that the sodium would also be high. Now, the other way to think about it is if your ADH is high and you're holding on to the fluids, that it's diluting the sodium, then you'd want to look at why is she holding on to the fluids? What other reason is she not excreting?
Yeah, I mean, her sodium level came back. I mean, 138.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. 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 So the high ADH, I'm not sure clinically what the significant, you know, what kind of conditions, I'd have to look that one up. But as far as, you know, if you've got high levels of antidiuretic hormone, that means that you're trying to prevent the body from excreting too much liquid. Does she have adrenal stress?
A little bit. Her aldosterone level was, her DHEA level was a little bit low, 158. So the ideal range on your sheet is 275 to 400. And her aldosterone level was a little bit on the high side, at 19.3.
Yeah. I mean, it could be that the body's trying to hold on to the fluid because it doesn't want to lose some of those electrolytes, so it makes that high.
Okay.
Does she have any other electrolytes off? Potassium, chloride?
4.4.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm looking up I was going to look up in the pathology book if there's a particular thing to be looking for with elevated ADH. I don't think it's in our blood chemistry software because it's not a common one that we do on our, but antidiuretic hormone, where is it? This is a book that is a good one to have. I mean, it's not going to give you clinical functional type stuff, but it's a good book for all the standard stuff. And it's called Laboratory Diagnostic Texts, Francis Fischbach. I mean, my issue is old. It's back from when I first started school. So it's probably from the 80s. But I'm sure they have a later edition of it. Yeah, I think this one's from 1978 or something. Oh, 88. Originally 80, then 88. So ANTI, antidiuretic, antibody, antidiuretic hormone in blood, 292, and in sodium regulation, 260. Okay, so let's see, 292. I mean, I like to find what's the conventional medical explanation, and then we can look for a functional one as well. So antidiuretic hormone. It's excreted by the posterior pituitary. When ADH is present, small volumes of concentrated urine are excreted. When ADH is absent, large volumes of diluted excrete. You know, so it holds on. Clinical implications of increased ADH are associated with include intermittent porphyria. So I would be looking at maybe her B6 and zinc levels. Does she have any signs of porphyria?
No, it's not particularly. Okay. It's really bizarre, actually. Both of us have been supplemented quite heavily with zinc, but we both did the zinc taste test, and neither of us tasted anything after 2 minutes, nothing. A single thing. And my plasma zinc came back low. I didn't test her plasma.
You're not absorbing zinc.
I'm taking maybe 90 to 100 milligrams a day.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's still low. I'm taking HCL as well.
Right, is HCL. Right. Okay, so what interferes with zinc? We're looking at nutrients that interfere with zinc. Off the top of my head, I'm not. Yeah, so definitely signs of low zinc. Does she have, like, you know, poor wound healing and things like that? Any other signs of zinc? No? But menstrual issues, menstrual disorders? No. Yeah. Well, there's zinc is important in those metabolites. Zinc is interesting, but why wouldn't you be absorbing enough of it? And I mean, I would say increase it, but not at 90. That's a lot. I don't know that I would, given that you're, if as long as you monitor, it, you know, if you've done a zinc plasma, I would do maybe a white blood cell zinc or a red blood cell zinc to see.
I had a long chat actually about this with the director of one of the labs here in the UK. I speaking to him for probably 45 minutes about the different ways of measuring minerals. And they run minerals, red blood cell,
really? That's not what all the other research has shown.
He explained to me about red blood cell things. And it is over the top of my head, but he was saying that quite often it can distort it, just like the first one is the red blood cell. So often it can become a marginal deficiency. But he was saying, interestingly, it's really important when you do a plasma thing to make sure you're fasted. Because if you eat anything, it will generally decrease your plasma thing.
Do you have high doses or exposure to copper? Do you have copper pipes? Are you eating high copper foods? Lots of macadamia nuts. Macadamia nuts tend to be high in copper. Anything like that?
Sorry, I just lost you
then. Copper. So looking at your copper levels, are your because copper interferes with zinc. So is there an exposure to copper since it's both of you? Maybe it's something in your pipes, your water system.
I haven't tested her, but in her hair it's fine. Probably doing a hair analysis, not showing up. And when I tested I tested plasma copper, and it was also on the lower end of the range. Because I also thought that, but I am supplementing a little bit of copper, just because I'm taking so much zinc.
Right, you know, something like 2 milligrams. Yeah, 2 milligrams copper for every 30 milligrams zinc is kind of rule of thumb. Yeah, I know, but it's all related, right? So, you know, with the ADH, I don't see that, and we go back to that page because it was 292. And there was another page on here that talked about 292.
Yeah, Liv made a good point, actually. My iron levels are too high, which might be interfering with things.
Oh, yeah. Hers are fine. Right, phytic acid and those kind of things, but I knew you didn't do that. There's a book I recently got, and I haven't read it yet. It's an old book, and I can't remember. It's an old, I think it might have been Abraham Huffer or somebody like that, but it's on zinc, and I haven't read it. So I think you're inspiring me to go pull it out and see what he has to say.
Maybe try a different form. I mean, we were supplementing with a combination of zinc colonate and zinc glycinate.
Well, you know, you might try as the liquid for a while and just try the ionized and do it on empty stomach and have a little vitamin C with it to help it absorb and see if that works. Yeah, there's an article here. Let's see. Oh, it's a book, Zinc and Newman Metabolism or Newman Biology, Promoters and Antagonists of Zinc Absorption. I'll stick it in the chat.
I was reading something the other day, just doing some research into it, and they were saying that zinc is better absorbed with fat soluble vitamins as well. So I actually take zinc with emulsified vitamin A, vitamin D, and vitamin K. When we take our fat soluble vitamins, I take the zinc.
Oh, I think I just found a really good chart. Yeah, so that should help. Oh, here's a cool chart on vitamin and mineral antagonists and agonists. Kind of a good thing to keep around. I just kind of looking at that. So if I look at zinc, oh, I like this chart. So antagonists are B1, B10, B12, D and E, calcium, copper, iron, and phosphorus, aluminum, and then your heavy metals, aluminum, cadmium, mercury, nickel, and lead. But then as far as agonists to enhance it, A, B6, D and E, and then chromium, potassium, manganese, magnesium, and phosphorus. Well, wait, that says both. How can phosphorus be both? That's interesting. Anyway, it's a cool chart. I put the list there. I think it's a good reference chart. I'm going to kind of put it somewhere.
Perfect. Thank you. I tried to click on it. I think you might need to find a book. Do you?
The first one was a book. The second one is not. The second one is a chart.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the second one's just a chart.
Can you break to the same link,
actually? Oh, you know, that happens sometimes. Let me see, copy. Sometimes I say copy and it keeps the same link. So paste, there we go. Is that it? No. Why won't it, is it Springer? What? Did my thing not? Interesting. I'm saving this into a Word file so I can see if the chart actually doesn't become mush, you know, when you sometimes do that in a chart becomes mush. It all gets mushed together. But maybe we can turn this into a chart, this information into a chart. Ooh, my computer is jammed. Well, I don't know what the story is, but that link is in my browser. Something's wrong with my computer. It's not copy-pasting. That happened to me once before. Nope, it won't copy-paste. It's just keeping that silly link in there. I just tried to copy-paste the whole chart. So let me see. Copy. Let me just do a Control-C instead of copy. Maybe that'll do it. Kind of weird. This happens to my computer periodically, and I have to reboot it then. Control-V. There it is. Okay, let me go back there and see if I can get it to work now. My copy, you know, right-click copy stops working. Does it say chapter? Okay, so let me. Okay, good. Paste, copy, and then paste. Okay, try that one.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So I copied it into a Word file, too, and it looks like it'll copy. It copied okay and kept the formatting, so it might be a good thing to just keep out as a desk reference.
Oh, perfect. Yeah.
Yeah.
Brilliant. That's really good. Thank you for that.
Sure. Yeah, you're welcome. Yep, there's always something.
So with the hormones, if someone's got slightly elevated, not with anabolic, but slightly elevated total estrogen levels, but she's also got good levels of testosterone and progesterone, what would be the easiest way to find or to bring down the estrogen levels finally? What would be your first
What about the metabolites? Are there high 4s, 2s, 16s? How are all those ratios? And how's the estrogen quotient?
The ratios are really good.
Like how low? Like 0.8, 0.6? Ooh.
Let me
look at
that. Hold on. 0.76.
Yeah, so iodine, super important for that.
Yeah.
Iodine, super important for that. So I would go with the iodine, and I would probably add progesterone. So while you're working on trying to figure out how to get the estrogen down or get the quotient right, I would be working on progesterone. Because if her estrogen quotient is that means that if she's got too much total estrogen, then she has way too much of the E1, E2 compared to E3. So that'd be my concern there. So I would probably boost the progesterone while you try to bring that ratio back into balance. Let's see. And her estrogen quotient is low, right? That means that she's got way too much of the E1, E2. I don't mind if the estrogens are high if it's mostly estriol.
Okay.
But I'm concerned that way. So I would, to boost the ratio, even though she's not deficient in progesterone, I might consider progesterone or something like Vitex or some herb that's going to boost her progesterone. Vitex seems to be the most reliable.
That's what I'm thinking. There's a product called Pregnancy Prep, which has tribulus and Vitex.
Yeah.
Something that I speak to Dr. Carrie about from Precision Hormones. Terrestris, rhodiola, chase tree berry extract, red raspberry leaf, dong quai, motherwort, maca, enzyme.
That's good. Yeah. Yeah, I would look at something like that. Just make sure it has enough of the chase tree and just see how that goes.
Okay.
And her testosterone, is it on the high end of normal, low end of normal? Where is it at? Bang in the middle. Yeah, so I mean I wouldn't start messing with testosterone if you're trying to get pregnant, but I would they can't hurt with progesterone. Well, iodine, she's low in iodine. She's clearly low in iodine, so that might be the thyroid thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. That could be the answer.
Yep. And remember what Dr. Wilson said about the iodine. Don't freak out if the TSH starts to go up. It could go up for 6 months.
Yeah.
But she'll feel better. Yeah.
And her free T4 is fine. Her free T4 is at 1.15. But we also tested her thyroglobulin this time, her thyroid thyroxine binding globulin, and that was a little bit on the high side.
Mm.
So I don't know if there's anything that we can do to bring that down. That'll obviously free up some thyroid.
Lower the estrogen. Lower the estrogen. That's what will do it. That's excess estrogen. Mhm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And is there anything to bind some of the excess estrogen?
That's what I'm trying to think of, and nothing's coming to my mind off the top of my head. My first start would be to shift the ratio at the minimum, but I mean, you think about aromatase inhibitors. Right. So you can look at aromatase inhibitors but then she'll be lower in testosterone. Oh, no, she'll be higher in testosterone. Yeah. So aromatase inhibitors. Yeah. Saw palmetto, zinc,
there comes zinc again. You know, some of the omega-6s like borage oil, the GLA, those are all aromatase inhibitors. I don't know. I was thinking of that too, but I think that more affects the metabolites and more pushes you towards the 2-hydroxy. But it could be. Lynn just reminded me that next week we have a an advanced clinical resources call with Dr. Lynch, and he's going to be addressing estrogen and the relationship with high estrogen and the relationship with methylation. Oh.
8.5.
Does she have any MTHFR genetics?
She is heterozygous for the A1298, I believe, off the top of my head.
Okay. What about her MTRRs, right? Her B12. Yeah, I know. It's hard to remember all these things. Yeah, so that could be an issue there. And I know that Dr. Lynch is going to talk about the high estrogen and the relationship to methylation. So I'm looking forward to what he has to say about that. Yeah, there you go with the B12. So she's going to need extra B12 support. What about her COMTs? Because that's related to estrogen metabolism.
No, she's fine.
Oh, good, good. Green, normal, as opposed to hetero. That's good. So you don't have to worry about methylation. So you can get her on some good, just like start gradually increasing her methyl B12. Oh, okay, good. Well, that should help. That should help. Because, you know, there's so much, and she, I'm assuming, you know, dietarily she's off the gluten and the dairy, and she's mostly on your same kind of diet as you are, paleo, and yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, those are the things I would look at. I've seen people go up as high as 10 or 15. There's a supplement from some company I got a sample from at one of the Ben Lynch things, and it's got 15 milligrams of,
oh, wow.
yeah, folate and B12. Yep. 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 I usually have people do that and take, like, you know, a couple of drops because, you know, when they have the COMT problems and I'm afraid of methyl trapping.
Yeah, no, she's fine. She's not sensitive.
Good. Oh, that's good. That's good. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, well, I would keep that up for sure. And I would certainly look at aromatase inhibitors.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's interesting that the zinc, that may be why she needs so much zinc, but maybe if you add some of the others, look up saw palmetto, make sure there's no contraindications if you're trying to get pregnant. But actually, saw palmetto in females can be very balancing. But just look it up and make sure that you're comfortable with it. And then the GLA, like I'll usually use borage or black raspberry, black currant, or evening primrose.
Yeah, black currant. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Very good.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for that. Always much appreciated.
Yeah, you're so welcome. Glad I could be of assistance there.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Bye. Okay, if you could just put your mic on mute, that way I can open anybody else's up if they need it. Just their little mic. Yeah, that'll be great. Anybody else? I see Tony's hand is still up from when she asked, when she answered that she could hear Jamie, but I'm going to open up her line anyway. Hey.
Hello, Dr.
Nobody else had a hand up, so I just had to open you up, eh?
No, everything's fine. No, that's still from when you asked me about Jamie. But I do have a question about the Saul Palmetto. What is he trying to balance? Because I couldn't hear a lot of that. What is that good for balancing?
Oh, there's an enzyme called aromatase that will convert from testosterone to estrogen.
Okay.
Okay. And
All right.
We usually do aromatase inhibitors. We look at men because a lot of men, as they get older, they get deficient in some of these things and they have too much testosterone turning to estrogen. So they start to develop little man boobs and lose their motivation and lose their sex drive and all that. So we usually I see that in men, but in women, you know, if we're looking at menopausal women, we're usually not worrying about aromatase inhibitors. But with somebody who's you know, in pregnancy, childbearing years, and has too much estrogen, and it's just a way to decrease the conversion. So the downside, there's no downside. She'll have, it'll probably boost her estrogen, her testosterone up a little bit. Remember, I asked him where in the spectrum was the testosterone. So the testosterone was middle of the range. So if she's converting more to estrogen and she slows that down a little, then she'll just have a slightly higher testosterone and lower estrogen. And then if she throws in the progesterone as well, that's going to keep the ratio from being skewed. At least that's a temporary step in to put the level up, right? So if we got an estrogen's dominant over the progesterone and we don't know yet, or it's going to take a while to get the estrogen down, we bring the progesterone up because we could do that rather quickly.
Okay. That makes sense. Thank you. I got a little lost in there.
Oh, yeah. I can see that because we were just rambling back and forth and yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. All right. So, you know what? We got some people that are not in NEPT, but we're going to be sending out finally the how to get signed up for the retreat in May. The hotel finally got back to us with, here's your, you know, there's no online. They're like in the Stone Ages out there. So you have to call them up or fax them when you make a reservation. But it's going to be really cool. And we're sending that out in your newsletter on Sunday. So I'm hoping that we get everybody to at least let me know so we have a general sense of how long, how many people are going to be showing up. So exciting. Yay. So Simone.
Hi, Dr. Rita Marie. I think we're getting down to the wire here. I think it's time for you to shift gears to the VLM call, which I have questions and I'm probably more, you know, maybe appropriate in that call. However, I'm going to be limited with time because
Well, I can take you right away in there. So
okay, great.
I can pull you up first in there. And then if we do finish this call within 5 minutes of starting the other, then at least I get to go to the bathroom and grab a bite to eat.
Yes,
so I don't mind that we're finishing up. Yeah, and
take care
and we'll
of yourself.
Just stay on the line. I'm not going to hang up or anything. I'll just put myself on mute. And then I'll be back in 5 minutes. So it looks like there's no other questions for the INE call. So I'm just going to go ahead and, yeah. Great. Everybody go to the chat and pull up that chart I showed, because it's a really cool chart that has a list of vitamins and minerals and their antagonists and their agonists. So it's a really nice chart. I'm going to print it out and keep it handy as I'm going through people's protocols and appraisals. So. All right, everybody, thank you so much. I'll open up the lines and let everybody say goodbye to each other. Take care. Bye.
Bye.
Welcome.
Bye. Thank you.
You're so welcome.